Listening Library presents Then Again, Maybe I Won't by Judy Blume. Read for you by Justin Long. Who says March is supposed to come in like a lion and go out like a lamb? That's a lot of bull. All it's done this March is rain. I'm sick of it.
Hey, Tony!
Mrs. Gorski yelled from her upstairs window. I pretended not to hear her. I took a Jersey Journal out of my sack and tossed it onto her front porch. Pow, pow, pow! I got you, Mrs. Gorski. Now you can't scream if I don't put your paper under your doormat. This time she banged on the top of her window while she yelled,
Tony Miglione! I know you can hear me!
Sure I can, so can the whole neighborhood.
Don't you forget to put my paper under my doormat.
I didn't say anything.
Tony!
Then I turned around and looked up at the window. Who, me?
Yes, you!
But it's pouring, Mrs. Gorski, I called.
So? You won't melt?
Maybe I will. Then you'll be in big trouble because my family will come looking for me, and you'll have to tell them how I melted down to nothing right on your front porch. I walked away from Mrs. Gorski's house. She was still banging on her window. Well, let her. I didn't feel like climbing her porch steps. What's the worst thing she can do to me? Call my boss, that's what. So? He'll understand. There's no rule that says I've got to put the paper under her doormat. As long as it doesn't land in the bushes, I'm allowed to throw it from the sidewalk. If this rain ever stops, I'll go back to doing it her way. Then she'll be satisfied. I don't know what I'll do about my paper route next year when I go to junior high. I don't want to give it up, but Jefferson Junior has an after-school basketball league, and I want to play in it. Basketball is my favorite sport. I just wish I was taller. My brother Ralph says I'll probably sprout up at 14 like he did. I hope I don't have to wait that long. It's important to be tall when you're playing basketball. You're that much closer to the basket. I play at the Y all day Saturday and every Sunday afternoon, always with the same bunch of guys, Frankie Bellino, Joe Shank, Joe Rosella, and Billy Turner. We call the two Joes Big Joe and Little Joe. Rosella's the big one. Maybe my boss will let me deliver later in the afternoon next year. I hope so. I could get around a lot faster if I had a bike I could depend on. But all I've got is Ralph's old one, which doesn't work most of the time. I've been thinking about buying a new bike, a 10-speed Schwinn, bright red. But my father says it's more important to put my money in the bank for college. He's saving for my education already, and I don't even know what I want to be. Suppose I don't want to go to college. My father will be disappointed. He wants me to be a teacher like Ralph. And we have a state teacher's college right here in Jersey City. That's where Ralph went and where Angie goes now. She's Ralph's wife. They live upstairs. Between the two of them, you'd think they invented education. I wonder how I'll feel going to the school where my brother teaches. Probably I won't get Ralph anyway. At least I hope I don't. It'll be bad enough when the other kids find out my brother's the wizard of 7th grade social studies. Suppose they get ideas and ask me to fix it with Ralph for them to get good marks. What will I do then? Wait a minute. Maybe I can say I'm no relation to Ralph Miglione, the teacher. We just happen to have the same last name. After all, Jersey City's a big place. Not everybody knows my family. Yeah, that's what I'll say. And I'll warn Big Joe, Little Joe, Frankie, and Billy in advance. They're my best friends. They can keep a secret. If only the rain would stop. I can hear my mother saying when I get home,
Why didn't you wear your rubbers? Why are they just sitting in the closet?
4 more houses and I'll be done delivering for the day. Good. I'm starving. I wonder what's for supper. Grandma does all the cooking at home. She's my mother's mother, and she's really a great cook. Frankie says he'd rather eat at my house than anywhere. One thing I really like about Frankie is how he treats Grandma. He acts like there's nothing wrong with her, but Grandma can't talk anymore. She had cancer of the larynx 2 years ago, and they had to operate and remove it. She could learn to talk again through a burping method if she was willing, but she's not willing. She moves her lips a lot like she's talking, but no sound comes out. If she has something really important to tell us, she writes it down. Always in Italian, which I can't read. Once I caught Billy and Little Joe fooling around pretending to be my grandmother. They were waving their arms around and moving their lips like Grandma does. When they saw me standing there, they stopped. If I hurry, I might get home before my mother. Then I can change my shoes and she won't see how wet they are. I made it. My mother probably got hung up in traffic somewhere. That happens a lot when the weather's bad. She works in Newark, selling underwear in Orbach's. I wonder what it's like watching ladies try on underwear all day. I'd really like to get a look at that. I took off my shoes in the front hall and hung my raincoat on the hook. My feet were soaked. So were the bottoms of my pants. I sat down on the floor and peeled off my socks. One had a big hole in it. Angie came flying down the stairs then and almost crashed right into me.
Tony, you're absolutely drenched.
I know, I said. It's pouring out. She started back upstairs.
I'm going to get a towel to dry off your hair.
I can do it myself, I told her. Angie likes to play mother with me. Sometimes I let her and sometimes I don't. It depends on my mood. My father says Angie has fat legs. I've been looking at her legs a lot lately, and I don't think they're too fat. I think they're nice. Maybe someday I'll marry a girl like Angie. Then again, maybe I won't. Maybe I'll never get married. I went into my room, dried off, and changed my clothes. Then I headed for the kitchen. Grandma was tossing a salad. I'm home, I said. Grandma smiled and offered me an olive. I really like olives. Big Joe says if you eat a lot of them, you make out good with the girls when you're older. But that's not why I eat them. I liked them before I ever heard about that. Big Joe knows plenty. He told me and Frankie about wet dreams. I wonder if I'll ever have one. What's for supper? I asked Grandma. She pointed to the oven. Chicken? I asked. Grandma shook her head. Lamb? She shook it again. Veal. Now Grandma nodded. I play this game with her every night. She likes me to guess what we're having to eat. The only way I can have a conversation with her is if I ask the questions and she answers by moving her head. As far as I know, Grandma spends her time doing two things. One is she cooks, and the other is she walks to church every single morning. I think she's Father Pissarro's best customer. When my mother and father got home, we all sat down to supper. Ralph and Angie eat with us every night, too. I don't think Angie knows how to cook. Pop told us that starting tomorrow morning, he'll be working on an office building downtown. They need a lot of rewiring done. My father's an electrician. He works for a contractor. He's even got his own truck. It says Vic Miglione on the door. Under that, there's a picture of a telephone book with "You saw it in the yellow pages" written across.
Is it a big job? My mother asked.
Pretty big, Pop said. Should last about 4 weeks.
Well, that's something, Mom said.
I was just about finished with my veal cutlet when Ralph pushed his plate away and said, Angie went to the doctor today. You might as well know. She's pregnant, my mother said.
Ralph! Ralph!
She shook her head. My father closed his eyes. Grandma moved her lips very fast. Angie jumped up and ran to the bathroom. I know I shouldn't think about Ralph and Angie the way I do. I know I shouldn't think about what you have to do to get somebody pregnant, but sometimes I just can't help it. He and Angie really do those things. Ralph admitted it. All of a sudden, it was very quiet. Did they know what I was thinking? I tried to laugh and said, "What's everybody so gloomy about? They're married." I meant this to be a joke, but nobody got it.
"Tony, Tony,"
my mother said in her "Ralph, Ralph" voice.
"You don't understand."
"Understand what?" I asked. Ralph explained. "We don't have much money, kid. Angie was supposed to teach for a few years to get us started. We can't afford to have a baby."
"Oh,"
I said. Angie didn't stay in the bathroom long. She came back to the table and sat down. She didn't look so good, but she smiled at me.
"Well, you're going to be an uncle, Tony. How does it feel?"
"Oh, fine. What was I supposed to say?" Then Angie looked at Ralph and started to cry again. My mother stood up and put an arm around her.
"It's all right, Angie. We'll help out. Don't worry." "How can I not worry?"
Angie asked.
"You and Pop have done so much already. The apartment upstairs, and our meals, and..."
My father coughed. "Listen, Angie, you're my family. That baby is going to be my grandson."
"How do you know it's a boy?"
my mother asked. "I just know, that's all," my father said.
"I'm sorry," Angie told us. "I wanted to teach. I really did." "I know. I know," my mother said, as if repeating everything twice meant it wasn't as bad as it sounded.
"At least Angie will be able to finish college and get her degree," Ralph said. "That's good," my father tried to sound happy.
"Maybe I'll give up Orbox and take care of the baby so Angie can teach anyway,"
my mother said.
"Let's wait and see."
While my mother was talking, Grandma got up and came back with her pad and pencil. She wrote a note and handed it to my mother, who translated. We'll call him Vinny. Vinny was my other brother. He was killed in Vietnam. My mother got tears in her eyes, and she and Grandma touched hands. Why does everybody think babies are such an expense? They're very small, and they hardly eat anything. While I was thinking this, Angie ran into the bathroom again. If you ask me, she was puking. As soon as we got up from the table, my father went downstairs. He's got a workshop fixed up in the basement, and that's where he spends all his free time. He invents things. I don't understand the stuff he does in his workshop, so I don't go down much. Neither does Ralph. Vinny was the one with a scientific mind. At least that's what my family's always saying. Tonight, when I go to bed, I might think about Vinny. I do that sometimes, so I won't forget him. Or maybe I'll concentrate on getting good enough to shoot 30 baskets a minute. In a few weeks, the weather changed. It was really spring. I knew because my mother sent my winter jacket to the cleaner. She never does that unless she's sure it's going to stay warm. She says changeable weather is sick weather and that I have to wear a winter jacket until the middle of April, like it or not. What she doesn't know is that as soon as I'm out of sight, I take off my jacket and carry it around with me. Once my father finished the job in the office building, he started spending more and more time in his basement workshop. A couple of nights, he asked Mom to give him a sandwich for supper, and he even ate down there. My mother and Ralph are both working at extra jobs. Mom is staying at the store two nights a week, and Ralph is selling shoes after school on Saturdays. Every night, the family is so pooped out they fall asleep right after supper. The only good thing about this is I get to watch whatever I please on TV. One morning in the middle of breakfast, my father came into the kitchen wearing his best suit. He was carrying a small metal box. He didn't sit down at the table, he just grabbed a cup of coffee and said goodbye. "Where's Pop going?" I asked.
"New York," my mother said.
"What for?"
"Eat your eggs," my mother said.
"I am eating them," I told her. "What's he all dressed up like that for?"
"Finish your milk, too."
I got the point. She wasn't going to discuss it with me. My father put on his best suit for the next 3 days. He left the house carrying that metal box every morning, and he didn't come home until late at night. Whatever Pop's secret was, I felt pretty lousy that they didn't let me in on it. I had a few ideas of my own, though. One, my father is a secret agent. The electrician business is a front. His real spy work is done in the basement workshop, and his information is in that box. Two, my father is in trouble with the Jersey City mob. He has to testify at hearings every day. The secrets are locked in that metal box. Three, my father is sick. He has cancer, like Grandma. He has to go to New York for special treatments. His medicine is in the box. The more I wondered about Pop, the more my stomach started to hurt. Last January, I had really bad stomach pains, and my mother took me to the doctor. He said it was nothing, that I just shouldn't eat so much roughage. I told him I never ate roughage in my whole life. The doctor laughed and said roughage is lettuce and celery and stuff like that, so now instead of eating salad every night, I have it only once or twice a week. I still get a lot of stomach aches, but my mother says it's gas. I don't even tell her about them anymore. I'm afraid she'll come after me with the castor oil. At the end of my father's third day out, my mother worked late and Pop met her in Newark. I was already in bed by the time they came home. I was reading Great Basketball Heroes of Our Times and figuring if I got good enough, I could get an athletic scholarship to some college and my father wouldn't need the money he was saving for my education. He could use it to pay for the baby instead. When they came into my room to say goodnight, my mother asked me to put my book away and listen carefully because she had something very important to tell me. "What is it?" I asked.
"You see, Tony," she began.
Then she looked at my father and said,
"Oh, Vic, I'm just too excited. You tell him."
I sat up in bed. "This is it. He's going to tell me. At last I'll know the secret. No matter what it is, I won't break down in front of him. I'll tell him it's all right, that I know how these things can happen."
"I've made a deal, Tony," my father said. "That is, I think I've made a deal."
So it's a deal, I thought. He sold out to protect us. That's why my mother's excited.
"Are you listening, Tony?"
my father asked.
"Sure, Pop."
"Well, I'll know more tomorrow when the lawyers talk."
"What lawyers?"
"Sam Rankin, my lawyer, has to meet with a lawyer for J.W. Fullerbach Electronics," my father said. I asked my mother,
"What's he talking about?"
"Tony, Tony!"
Here she goes again, I thought.
"Your father's a genius, an absolute genius. Did you know that, Tony?"
She gave my father a juicy kiss and kept talking. I always knew it. Deep down inside, I always knew.
My father a genius? What's she talking about now? My father's regular.
I don't get it, I said.
Well, Tony, my father began, loosening his tie, one of my ideas about electrical cartridges, one of the things I've been working on downstairs,
I interrupted. You know I don't understand that stuff, Pop.
So listen, maybe this time you'll understand.
Okay, I'm listening, I said. My father told me how he took his idea to Mr. J.W. Fullerbach, and how he had to see two assistant secretaries, three regular secretaries, and a vice president before he got to see J.W. Fullerbach himself. But it was worth it because Mr. Fullerbach likes the electrical cartridges, and my father, and my father's ideas, and he wants all three.
You're going to work for him? I asked.
We'll see, my father said.
You're quitting your job with Mr. Dalto?
We'll see.
Oh.
This means money, Tony, my father said. It means Ralph and Angie won't have to worry. Can you understand that?
Sure, Pop. Sure, I understand. I put my head on the pillow. My mother turned out the light and kissed me on my forehead. So my father's not a secret agent. He's not mixed up with a mob. And he doesn't have cancer. But what was he talking about? One of his inventions? He really invented something that somebody wants? Is he a genius? And if he is, how come it took so long to find out? My father took the bus to New York every morning for the next week. His regular boss, Mr. Dalto, called in the afternoon to find out how Pop was feeling. That's how I knew my father had reported in sick. I didn't give him away, though. I said, "He's getting better, Mr. Dalto. Thank you for calling." At the end of the week, when Pop came home from New York, he picked me up and swung me around. Now that's something he never does anymore. I'm much too big. So I yelled, "Hey, put me down!" Then my father picked up my mother and swung her around. Then my grandmother and Angie, but not Ralph. Ralph is bigger than my father. While he was swinging us all around like that, he laughed and yelled, "We're going to be rich! Rich!" My mother hollered,
"Vic, calm down. You're no kid. Think of your heart."
So Pop made us all sit down on the couch while he stood up in front of us and told us about his deal. J.W. Fullerbach Electronics is going to manufacture my father's electrical cartridges, and my father's going to manage the plant that's going to do the manufacturing.
"It's one of the Fullerbach plants in Queens," my father said. "But now, thanks to Sam Rankin, it's going to be called the Fullerbach Miglione Engineering Corporation."
My mother tried that out for size.
Fullerbach Miglione. Fullerbach Miglione.
And I thought, Fullerbach Miglione?
"I get stock in Fullerbach Electronics with options, of course," my father said, doing a little dance. "I tell you, we are going to be rich."
I don't know anybody rich. Everybody I know is just like me. I wonder what rich is like. It probably means that Ralph and Angie can have a baby every year.
"Angie, let me kiss you," my father said. "If it wasn't for that baby you and Ralph are expecting, I'd never have had the guts to try out my electrical cartridges on anybody."
"Say, Pop," I said, "how are you going to get from Jersey City to Queens every day?" That was the part of it I understood.
"I'm not going to, Tony," my father said.
"You're not?"
"Nope."
"Well, then what?" I asked.
"I'm going to get from Rosemont to Queens."
"What's Rosemont?" I asked.
"It's a town in Long Island."
"You're going to live there?"
"We're going to live there," my father said.
"We are?" I asked.
"That's right."
"All of us?"
"All of us."
Goodbye, Jersey City, I thought. Goodbye, basketball at the Y. Goodbye, Little Joe and Big Joe. Goodbye, Frankie and Billy. Goodbye, Jersey Journal paper route.
"What's the matter, Tony?" my mother asked.
"The kid's excited," Ralph said. "Can't you see? The kid's just so excited."
"And why not?" my mother asked. "How many kids have a genius for a father?"
I don't cry anymore. I'm too old for that baby stuff, which is why I ran for the bathroom and locked myself in. I cried really quiet. Not like Angie, who does it so loud everybody knows. We all finished the school year in Jersey City, but it wasn't the same for me. because when the guys talked about Jefferson Jr., I knew I wouldn't be there. I didn't tell them we might be moving or about my father's new job. I pretended everything was just fine. Then Pop announced that we had a new house in Rosemont, just like he promised. On Sunday afternoon, we went for a ride to Long Island. On the way, my father said,
"You know, Tony, Mr. Fullerbach made all the arrangements for our new house."
"I know," I said.
"He says Rosemont's a nice place to live."
"I know, you already told me."
"And what a coincidence that Father Pissarro's cousin should be a priest there,"
my mother said. "We just found out about Father Pissarro's cousin this morning. After church, Pop told him we were moving to Rosemont, and he told us about his cousin. So when Pop said we were going there this afternoon, Father Pissarro said he'd call his cousin and we could stop by and say hello."
"I'm telling you, Tony, this family is getting lucky," Pop said. "I can feel it."
"It doesn't make me feel lucky to know that Father Pissarro's cousin is a priest in Rosemont. It's not that I don't like him, it's just that I don't care one way or the other about his family. I'd feel luckier if my father told me Willis Reed or Rick Barry lives there." Pop looked over at me.
"Well, what do you say, Tony? Are we getting lucky?"
A passing car tooted its horn at us then.
"Vic!"
my mother shouted.
"Keep your eyes on the road!"
"Who's driving?" my father asked. "You or me?"
You,
Mom told him.
"All I'm saying is just be careful."
"I'm always careful, right, Tony?"
"Right, Pop." We have the same conversation every time we go someplace in the truck. My father looks at whoever he's talking to, my mother yells, "Be careful," and my father tells her he's always careful. Usually this happens once going and at least once coming home. In an hour and a half, we got to Rosemont. Pop drove us all around. Rosemont is really something. I think I'd be excited about moving there if only I could take my friends with me. My father and mother kept smiling at each other.
"Our dream come true, Carmela," Pop said.
"Oh, Vic, I love it,"
my mother told him, squeezing his arm. Our new house is a big white one with a round driveway right up to the front door. All I could think of was, who's going to cut all that grass? So I said, "How much land do we have, Pop?" And my father said,
"Just about an acre."
"That's a lot of grass."
"And look how green it is,"
my mother said.
"I guess the gardener takes good care of it," Pop told her. "And Mr. Fullerbach arranged for the same man to work for us."
Whew, that's a relief. For a minute, I thought I'd get stuck cutting it. And if I had to cut all that grass, I'd never have time for basketball. That reminds me, now the guys will find out the truth that I'm moving away. And I feel kind of bad because our team will break up. How can you play with only four guys on a side? We couldn't go inside our new house because people are still living there. My father said we should be able to move by July 20th. That means I'll have my 13th birthday in Rosemont. I wonder what I'll get. We drove up and down our street a few more times, and then went to visit Father Pissarro's cousin. His church is called St. Joseph's, and it's smaller than our church in Jersey City, but a lot more modern. It's made out of brown bricks, and the front doors are all glass. The cross doesn't sit on top of the church. It's built right into the front and goes straight up past the roof. There are a lot of tall trees around it and a parking area right behind. My father pulled the truck in there and we got out. My mother said,
"Wait just a minute, Vic. I want to fix my hair."
When she was done, we walked around to the front of the church and went inside. It was very quiet. Services were over. The priest was expecting us. He came out to greet us right away. He and my father shook hands.
"I'm happy to meet you, Mr. Miglione. My cousin called to say you'd be here this afternoon. Welcome to Rosemont."
"Thank you, Father," Pop said. "I'd like you to meet my wife and my youngest son, Tony."
"Mrs. Miglione, I know you're going to enjoy living in Rosemont."
"Thank you, Father,"
my mother said. Then he looked at me.
"Well, Tony, how old are you?"
"About 12.
"Almost 13, I said. "In junior high?"
"Yes, I'm starting in September."
"He would be going into 8th grade, Father,"
Mom said.
"But he had pneumonia when he was 5, and the doctor told us not to rush him into school. So he started a year late."
My mother's always explaining why I'm a little older than the other kids in my class. If you ask me, she's worried that people will think I stayed back. I wish she'd stop explaining. I don't think anybody cares.
"We have an active junior youth group here, Tony," Father Pissarro said. "I think you'll like our activities. You can join when school starts."
"Thank you,"
I said. I felt funny about calling him Father Pissarro. He doesn't look like his cousin. He's younger and rounder, and he has more hair. To keep things straight in my mind, I decided to name him Father Pissarro II. On the way back to Jersey City, my father told us that J.W. Fullerbach lives on Long Island, too, but much farther out. His chauffeur drives him to work every day. Is that how it's going to be for us? I asked.
Don't be silly, Tony. We're going to be the same as always. Only we'll have a nice house and a new car,
my father said. We're buying a car? I asked.
Mr. Fullerbach will lease one for us. He does that for all his executives.
My father said executives really slow so I wouldn't miss it. What kind? I asked.
What kind of what?
Car. What kind of car will we get?
Whatever Mr. Fullerbach decides, my father said.
I found out the next week. It's a dark green hardtop with stereo speakers. The inside smells like new shoes. Big Joe, Little Joe, Billy, and Frankie came over to see it right away. I let them sit in it, and they were really impressed. Nobody we know has a hardtop with stereo speakers. Frankie asked me, could he take over my paper route since I was leaving town? I told him sure. I'd fix it with my boss.
My father says your father hit it big at the races, Big Joe said. That's how come you got the car and all.
That's not how come, I said. He invented something. How could Big Joe's father spread a story like that?
Yeah? What'd he invent?
Little Joe asked. Some electrical cartridges, I told him.
What's that?
Billy asked. It has to do with using lamps in the middle of a room. This way you don't have to plug anything in and you don't need a cord. You just attach an electrical cartridge.
You mean it's a kind of battery?
No, not exactly. I hated to admit I didn't really understand it myself.
Never mind any electrical cartridges, Billy said. My father says your father's hooked up with the mob. They bought him the car.
That's a lie, I yelled. I couldn't believe these guys. I always thought they were great friends. So why were they carrying on like idiots? The car is part of the deal. So's the new house, I explained. My father's got a good lawyer. He arranged it. A good lawyer is pretty important when you're making a deal, I said, like I knew all about it.
If your father's so smart, how come he never invented anything before?
Big Joe asked. He did, I told him, but he didn't try to sell any of his inventions.
So how come he did now?
Little Joe asked. Because Angie's going to have a kid and we need some money. I got out of the car and they followed me. I pretended not to care about what they were saying. I told myself the guys just feel bad because I'm moving away. Only Frankie was the same. He told me we'd still be great friends and he'd visit me and I'd visit him and all that. That night while I was getting ready for bed, Ralph came into my room and said,
Guess what, kid?
What?
Me and Angie are moving to Long Island, too.
To Rosemont with us? Ralph laughed a little. We'd love to live in Rosemont, kid, but who can afford it? We've got a little apartment in Queens. It's a nice neighborhood with plenty of young people.
Isn't that pretty far from Jefferson Junior? I asked.
Oh, I won't be teaching at Jefferson Junior next year.
You quit?
I've applied for a teaching job in Queens. No point hanging around Jersey City if the whole family's going to Long Island. Besides, Pop wants to sell this house, and it's time for me and Angie to be on our own.
Oh.
I finished buttoning my pajamas and made a ball out of my dirty clothes.
Hey, kid, aren't you glad? Now we'll still be able to see each other all the time.
Sure, I'm glad, I said. I didn't tell Ralph I thought he and Angie would stay in Jersey City and I'd come visit them every weekend and maybe play a little basketball at the Y. We moved on July 20th, just like Pop said. The funny thing about moving was we didn't even need a moving van, and that was what I was looking forward to most. One of those big orange trucks parked outside our house with a dozen men carrying out all our stuff. The reason we didn't need a moving van was we weren't taking anything old with us, except Grandma's pots and pans and my Jefferson Junior High wall pennant. My mother didn't want me to take it.
It's old, she said. What do you need it for?
I like it, I told her. I want to hang it above my bed.
You'll get a new one from Rosemont Junior High.
I want this one anyway. It used to be... I almost said Vinny's, but I caught myself in time and said Ralph's. We never talk about Vinny. Every time somebody mentions his name, Mom starts to cry.
Oh, all right. If it means so much to you, take it, she said.
Frankie came over to say goodbye again. He told me he got my paper route, and I warned him about Mrs. Gorski.
You've got to put her paper under the doormat or she'll call the boss and report you.
Okay, Frankie said. I'll remember.
Then he reached into his pocket and came up with a coin.
This is for you, Tony,
he said, handing it to me.
Thanks,
I said, taking it.
It's from England. It's worth about a dollar.
Thanks a lot, Frankie. It's really interesting. I wished I had something for him, too. I was still holding my Jefferson Jr. wall pennant. I unfolded it. I was hoping you'd come over this morning because I wanted to give you this. I handed it to Frankie.
Hey, thanks a lot, Tony. That's really nice.
It used to be Vinny's.
No kidding? That's really something. I didn't know Vinny went to Jefferson Jr.
Yeah, he did.
I'll hang it over my bed.
That's where I had it.
Yeah, I know.
My mother called me then.
Tony, hurry up. We're ready to go.
Well, see you, Frankie.
Yeah, see you, Tony.
A few trips in the green hardtop, a few more on the old truck, and goodbye, Jersey City. Hello, Rosemont. Everything in our Rosemont house is new except the carpeting. The old owners left it in as part of the deal. It's yellow, and it's so thick you can lose your shoes in it. My father says my mother bought out Newark, Jersey City, and half of New York fixing up the house. But he doesn't mind. He wants her to enjoy herself now that he can afford it. I have my own room with my own closet and also my own bathroom, which my mother says I'm supposed to keep neat. Grandma has her own bathroom, and so do my mother and father. All of these are upstairs. Downstairs, I counted two more, which makes a grand total of 5 bathrooms in one house. In Jersey City, we had one. If anybody had an emergency and the bathroom was in use, we always ran up to Ralph and Angie's. My closet has a light in it. I found this out when I opened the closet door. The light went on automatically. When you shut the door, it goes out. You don't even have to bother touching a switch or anything. I spent about 10 minutes just opening and closing my closet door. My bedroom is at the opposite side of the house from my mother and father's. Grandma's is in the middle. I have 3 windows in my room. 2 overlook the backyard and 1 overlooks the side by the garage. I think the reason we have this circular driveway is so you won't get tired walking from the garage to the front door. From my 2 back windows, I can see my next-door neighbor's yard. It has a big wooden fence all around it, the kind you can't see through at all if you're on the ground. But from my room, I can see right over it. That's how I know we might really be rich and my father isn't kidding around.
They have a swimming pool. It's rectangular with a statue at one end. There's a diving board and everything.
The thing is, every time I think about us being rich, I get scared. I know it's not going to last. I think the money will run out by January. My father used to kid around about how if he won the state lottery, the money would probably last 5 months. It's not that I'll mind moving back to Jersey City. It's just that I'll hate to face the guys. Big Joe will probably laugh and tell me he knew it all the time. And then there's Mom and Pop. They'll really be disappointed. They're so excited about living in Rosemont, but there's nothing I can do about it. Grandma spent the first few days in Rosemont in the kitchen. She opened every cabinet a million times and wrote my mother a whole pad full of notes, mostly about the stove and oven, which she doesn't like because they're electric instead of gas. My mother kept telling Grandma what a wonderful kitchen it is, so modern, and how easy it will be for her to cook now. My grandmother kept shaking her head, so my mother talked louder. She always does that when they disagree. She talks loud, as if Grandma's deaf. Only Grandma's hearing is fine, and talking loud doesn't do any good at all. I found out what happens to garbage in Rosemont. Number one is, we have an automatic disposal built into the sink. All the food scraps go down there and get ground up. Number two is, we have 3 garbage cans in the ground by the kitchen door. And twice a week the garbage truck comes by and the cans get emptied. Nobody puts their stuff down at the curb. The first few mornings we lived there, I got up early and rushed outside. So did Grandma, but not for the same reason as me. She walked to St. Joseph's every day. I wanted to make some friends before school started. That way I won't really be a new kid. I have a whole month to meet the Rosemont guys. That should be plenty of time. I hung around the front of our house waiting for somebody to notice me. It didn't take me long to find out that my new neighborhood is dead in the summer. I didn't see any kids, not even little ones. On my 4th Rosemont morning, I met Mrs. Huber from the swimming pool house. I was walking up and down my driveway counting stones when I saw her open her garage door. I watched her, hoping she would notice me. She did.
Oh, hello, she said. You new?
Yes.
I'm Mrs. Huber.
When she said that, I noticed she was carrying a pair of brown and white shoes with spikes.
What's your name?
She asked me.
I'm Tony Miglione.
Well, hi, Tony.
She got into her car and backed it out of the garage. Then she rolled down the window and told me she was on her way to play golf at the country club. My mother met her later that afternoon, and that night she told my father that our next-door neighbor is Diane Huber, and that Mr. Huber is vice president of Amelard Drugs, and aren't we lucky to be rubbing shoulders with such people? Then my mother told me that the reason I haven't made any friends in 4 whole days of looking around is because in Rosemont practically all the kids go away to camp in the summer, and that Mrs. Huber has 2 kids who will be home the end of August. Mrs. Huber also told Mom that some families have places at the beach and stay away from June to September. Back in Jersey City, we'd have thought you were pretty lucky to get to spend the summer in a place like Rosemont. Never mind camp and the beach. A week later, I met Mrs. Huber again. She was getting out of her car with a lot of packages. So I ran over and said, "Want some help?" She handed me a big box and said, "Thanks, Tony." I carried it to her front door and then she took it from me.
"I see you're having a lot of work done on your house."
"Us?" I asked. "No, we're not having anything done. It's perfect the way it is."
"Well, that's funny. There's a truck parked in your driveway all the time."
"Oh, that's my father's truck. Sometimes he drives it to work when my mother needs the car."
"It belongs to your father?"
"Sure. It even has his name on the door."
"Oh. Well, thanks for helping me, Tony."
"That's okay. Bye, Mrs. Huber." That night after supper, I said, "You know what, Pop? Mrs. Huber thought we were having a lot of work done on our house just because she saw your truck in the driveway." My mother looked at my father.
"She asked you about the truck?"
Mom said. "No, I told her it was Pop's." She didn't ask me anything. The next day, my father came home from work driving a new Ford instead of the old truck. He laughed and said,
"What do I need with a truck now?"
My mother said,
"I'm glad you decided that way, Vic. We don't want to start off on the wrong foot here."
Did he get rid of the truck just because Mrs. Huber thought we were having some work done? That's crazy.
"You know, Tony, you can't get anywhere without a car when you live out here," Pop said. "Your mother can't even get a quart of milk without driving a couple of miles, and the truck isn't so good on the highway. I'll be much more comfortable now."
Sometimes I get the feeling my father can read my mind. Along with a new car, Pop brought home a regulation basketball net and professional basketball. He put up the basket on the garage and said I should keep in practice because he expects great things from me. As a basketball player or what, I wondered. I spent the next few days shooting baskets until my mother told me the noise was making her head hurt, and that thump, thump, thump all day long was too much for anybody's nerves. "Would I please try to find something else to do a few hours a day?" she asked. So I watched the Huber swimming pool from my window. Nobody ever used it. What a waste! Life in Rosemont was not exactly what you would call exciting. On August 5th, I was 13 years old. I knew we were having roast beef for dinner and that Grandma baked me a birthday cake. But nobody asked me what I wanted, so I figured our new house was supposed to be a kind of birthday present. And anyway, I just got my basketball equipment. Still, a birthday's a birthday. In Jersey City, I always got something. Usually a shirt, a game, and $5 to spend any way I wanted. But if my family wasn't going to mention my 13th birthday, well, neither was I. I'd pretend to be happy without any presents. That afternoon, my father came home from the plant early. He hustled me off with him in the green hardtop. He drove past the Miracle Mile shopping center to the middle of another town called Belmart.
"I have a surprise for you, Tony,"
my father said, backing the car into a space.
"What?" I asked. "Tell me."
"Well, if I tell you, it's not a surprise," Pop laughed. "You'll see soon enough anyway. Come on."
I jumped out of the car and followed my father. The surprise turned out to be a brand new red 10-speed Schwinn. Wow! This was my best birthday ever. After that, I rode my bike around every day. I explored every street in Rosemont. I knew all the stores downtown. I found my junior high. I found the football field. I found the park. I wished it was September. Finally, Joel Huber came home from camp. We met right away. It was after supper and my mother was doing the dishes while Grandma sat at the kitchen table shelling pistachio nuts. I was eating them as fast as she was shelling them. My father was dozing in the other room. He doesn't have a basement workshop in our new house. I guess he doesn't need one now that his hobby is his business. When the doorbell rang, my mother asked me to get it.
I'm Joel Huber, this boy said when I opened the front door. He was my height, but thinner, with very light hair and an awful lot of it. When mine looks like that, my mother tells me it's time to go see the barber.
Are you Tony?
He asked. I nodded because I had a mouthful of nuts. When I finished chewing and swallowed them, I said,
Come on in.
My mother came out of the kitchen, drying her hands on her apron. Mom, this is Joel Huber, I said. Joel offered his hand to my mother.
How do you do, Mrs. Miglione? I'm happy to meet you.
Joel pronounced our name right. Not everybody does. A lot of people say Miglione, but the E on the end is silent. The doorbell woke up my father. He padded into the hallway in his stocking feet. This time when Joel shook hands, he said,
How do you do, sir? Glad to meet you.
I could tell right away that my mother and father were impressed. None of my friends in Jersey City say sir, and we don't shake hands every time we say hello to somebody. Are all the guys in Rosemont like this? I hope not. If they are, I may not make any friends here. I wish Frankie lived next door instead of this creep.
Well, let's not stand here in the hall,
my mother said to Joel.
Come in, come in.
Now, why did she have to go and do that? Doesn't she think I can pick my own friends? Joel followed my mother into the kitchen.
You want some pistachio nuts?
She asked him.
No, thanks,
Joel said. He spotted my grandmother. I could tell Grandma was studying him because she looked up and squinted. Joel offered his hand, but Grandma didn't bother to shake it. He started his line about how happy he was to meet her, and Grandma laughed, which is really unusual for her. When she laughs, her mouth opens, but no sound comes out. My grandmother can't talk, I told him. She has no larynx. Joel gave me a funny look, but he didn't say anything. We walked back into the front hall.
Do you play chess?
He asked.
No, do you?
Yeah, it's a good game. Maybe I'll teach you.
Okay,
I said, but I didn't mean it. Then he said,
Can you come over for a swim tomorrow?
Yeah, I'd really like that. I didn't tell him I'd been watching his pool most of the summer, wishing somebody would invite me over to use it. Before he left, Joel shook hands with my father again.
Glad to have met you, sir,
he said. And then to me,
See you tomorrow, Tony.
Okay, I said, closing the door behind him. I'd already learned that when the air conditioning's on, you've got to keep all the doors and windows closed.
What a nice boy,
my mother said.
Some manners, my father added.
I wonder how long Joel would last in Jersey City. About a week, I figure, if he was lucky. I went to the Hubers right after lunch the next day. The pool was heated. It was cooler than a bathtub, but not really cold. I was mighty glad I know how to swim. I don't do anything fancy, and I don't dive, but I do jump off the board, and in Huber's pool I could swim back and forth twice before running out of breath. Joel had on this grubby red bathing suit, and he has about the knobbiest knees I've ever seen. I felt funny in the new suit my mother bought me this morning. I should have worn my old one. The chessboard was set up on a round umbrella table. Joel seemed really anxious to teach me how to play. I only let him because, after all, it was his swimming pool. After I was there almost an hour, the back door slammed and Joel's sister Lisa came out. She was wearing a bikini and was very suntan, which made her hair look even lighter than Joel's. All I could think of was, wow, she was the best-looking girl I've ever seen in person anywhere. She has curves all over. I turned away from the chessboard so I could keep watching her. Lisa climbed onto the diving board and did a perfect swan dive into the water. After four laps of the crawl, she stuck her head up and spit out some water.
Hey, Joel,
she called.
Who's your friend? He's cute. Too bad he's not a little older.
Then she laughed and started to swim again. I could feel the red climb from the back of my neck where it started to my ears and then my face. Why do girls always say cute? That's such a dumb word. It makes me think of rabbits. The next time Lisa came up from under the water, Joel yelled,
This is Tony Miglione from next door.
Hi, I called. But she didn't hear because she was underwater again. I sat back in a lounge chair and watched Lisa swim. She did laps, back and forth, side stroke, backstroke, butterfly. I got dizzy just watching.
She's 16,
Joel said. I nodded.
You want a good laugh? Someday I'll show you her diary. I know where she keeps it.
I looked away from Lisa.
No kidding. Yeah, Jill said. It's great.
Then I remembered how I promised my mother that I would be polite to Mrs. Huber, that I would shake hands and everything just like Joel. "Is your mother home?" I asked.
"Nah, my mother's never home. She plays golf every day unless it rains. Then she shops or plays cards, when she's not on vacation, that is."
I wondered if that's what my mother was going to do.
"Hey, you want something to eat?"
Joel asked.
"Okay."
Joel shouted at the house.
"Millicent! Hey, Millicent, we're hungry!"
"Who's Millicent?" I asked.
"The maid. Only her name isn't really Millicent. She's got some Spanish name that my mother can't pronounce. So when she came to work for us, my mother renamed her. She didn't even speak English then. She taught me and Lisa to curse in Spanish." "No kidding. Maybe there's hope for me and Joel after all." "Hey, Millicent," Joel called again.
"What do you want?"
A voice answered from inside the house.
"You got any cake?"
"I got. You come get."
"I can't. I'm all wet," Joel hollered.
"Okay, I bring. But no crumbs by pool or your father kill me."
"She's scared of my father," Joel said.
"A lot of people are. Not me, of course. I know how to handle him. It's easy. Just stay out of his way."
Later, as I sat in my lounge chair eating chocolate cake, drinking cold milk and watching Lisa, I thought, "This is really the life." I spent most of Labor Day weekend at the Huber's pool.